I want to thank the mental health section for letting me give this presentation. I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Joyce West, Josh Wilk, Don Ray, Maritza Rubio-Stipek, and Daryl Regeer. I have no relationships to disclose. And I do want to acknowledge support from the American Psychiatric Foundation. And I want to special thanks to Lisa Countess for her support in the main study and for her extraordinary graphics abilities. The research objective for this study was to examine the relationship between medication switches, discontinuations, and other access problems, and suicidal ideation or behavior among psychiatric patients with Medicare and Medicaid insurance during the first year of the Medicare Part D benefit. Now, as you know, dual eligibles are beneficiaries who are eligible to receive health care coverage under both Medicare and Medicaid. And medications for many of these patients were covered, or a substantial proportion of them anywhere covered under Medicaid. Well, the Medicare Modernization Act of 2003, Part D, shifted drug coverage from Medicaid to Medicare, which meant that many of the dual eligibles came under new prescription drug management plans. The Part D prescription drug benefit was implemented in January 2006, and it affected about 2 million dual eligibles who had mental and addictive illnesses. And this is a highly vulnerable population, as you know. So as the dual eligibles came under the new prescription drug management plan, significant concerns emerged concerning their treatment, access, and continuity of care. So the previous findings indicated that psychiatric patients who had experienced medication access problems had significant increases in adverse events. And these were, for example, increased emergency department visits, increased psychiatric hospitalizations, a greater likelihood of homelessness or incarceration, and also increases in suicidality. So the current study was undertaken to better understand what the suicidality was that was associated with medication access problems. The implementation of Medicare Part D created an opportunity for us to conduct a naturalistic study. The data source was the National Study of Medicare and Medicaid and Medicare Psychopharmacologic Treatment Access and Continuity. And the data for this study were collected in three cross-sectional assessments in 2006. The sample consisted of randomly selected psychiatrists who were drawn from the AMA physician master file. The psychiatrists were eligible to participate if they had treated dual eligible patients in their last typical work week. We contacted almost 6,500 psychiatrists over the three cycles in 2006, and of these we had between 66 and 75% response rate. And of the responders, almost 1,500 of them, 35% were eligible to participate in the study. The data consisted of clinically detailed reports on one systematically selected dual eligible patient treated in the psychiatrist's last typical work week. We used data from the third cycle of data collection, which was from September to December of 2006, with our final sample being 908 patients. We used weighted descriptive statistics to compare patients with and without suicidal ideation or behavior on sociodemographic and clinical characteristics and medication access problems. And we also conducted propensity score analyses to examine suicidality among patients with and without medication access problems. These are the primary study measures. So suicidal ideation or behavior was defined as yes to the question since January 1st, 2006, has this patient had an increase in suicidal ideation or behavior? A patient was counted as having switched medications if the psychiatrist reported that since January 1, 2006, the patient was stable on a clinically desired or indicated medication but was required to switch to a different medication because the clinically preferred medication refills were not covered or approved. And then a patient was counted as having discontinued a medication if the psychiatrist reported that since January 1st, 2006, the medication was discontinued or temporarily stopped because of drug coverage, management, or administration issues or copayments. So the next set of slides shows the weighted distribution of sociodemographic and clinical characteristics among patients with and without psychiatrist-reported suicidality. Overall, psychiatrists reported that nearly 16% of the dual-eligible patients experienced suicidality in 2006, and that's shown in the top line of each slide. In terms of sociodemographic characteristics, consistent with the suicide morbidity literature, significantly more women than men experienced suicidal ideation or behavior, and there were no significant differences by race or sex in this patient sample. Significantly more patients with reported suicidality were seen by psychiatrists in the Midwest than in other regions of the country, so that the highlight should be on the Midwest rather than North. But there were no significant differences among patients by treatment setting. Patients with and without suicidality differed on selected clinical characteristics. The most common psychiatric disorders reported were psychotic mood and substance use disorders, but significantly more patients with suicidal ideation or behavior had psychiatric disorders other than these most common disorders, and they were also significantly more likely to have comorbid disorders, which is shown on the bottom line. Regardless of diagnosis, more patients with suicidality suffered from severe sleep problems and severe levels of depressive and anxiety symptoms. When we looked at the distribution of psychiatrist-reported medication access problems, a significantly higher proportion of patients had experienced a medication switch or a discontinuation or another access problem, and also a significantly higher proportion had more than one medication access problem. All these differences were highly significant. So the next two slides show the occurrence of suicidality among patients with and without medication access problems. So overall, more than one in five patients experienced more than one in five patients who experienced any medication access problem also experienced increased suicidality. The top two set of bars show the specific medication access problems. So you see the switch and the top and the discontinuation in the next set. Nearly one in three patients who had been clinically stable on a medication but were switched experienced increased suicidality, and over one in four patients whose medication was discontinued or stopped also experienced suicidality. These are the results of the propensity score analyses. Well, that's a long slide. So patients with specific medication access problems were compared with patients without medication access problems, controlling for sociodemographic and clinical characteristics. Each set of bars and arrows represents one model, which was repeated 150 times to stabilize the estimates. The red bar shows the mean odds ratio over the 150 iterations, and the blue arrow indicates the range of odds ratios over the 150 iterations. As you can see, all the odds ratios are highly significant for each model. Basically, the bottom line is any patients who experience any kind of medication access problem were significantly more likely to have also experienced suicidal ideation or behavior. So just to summarize, we found strong and consistent cross-sectional. I do want to emphasize that these are cross-sectional data, not causal. But we did find strong and consistent relationships between medication access problems and suicidal ideation or behavior. More than one in five patients who had any medication access problem also experienced suicidality. And one in three patients who were required to switch medications experienced suicidality. Now, there are a lot of good clinical reasons for switching patients from one medication regimen to another, but what are the clinical implications of a medication disruption that's tied to prescription drug coverage? And we found that suicidality can be a potential consequence of a medication disruption that is not clinically indicated, and clinicians need to be aware of this possibility and monitor their patients who experience these disruptions. There are also policy and public health implications. Dual-eligible psychiatric patients represent a highly vulnerable group with a substantial burden of illness, and they need special protections. Our findings show that one-size prescription drug plan does, in fact, not fit all dual-eligible or other vulnerable patients. prescription drug coverage and management policies related to medication access for seriously ill patients need to be revisited and revised if necessary, and prescription drug coverage and management policies that are sensitive to the needs of the most vulnerable patients can potentially ease suffering and may ultimately save lives. Stop here. Oh, this paper's in press.